don't do business with Iran. They are under sanctions from us. That was a warning that the U.S. president shot off to the entire world. This is while Washington says it is open to talks with Iran. Well, in this debate, we will look at why the U.S. believes that this approach, a sanctions regime it calls carrot and stick, will work with Iran. This is why Iran's allies, notably the EU, China, and Russia, have said that for the most part, they will continue doing business with Iran. But the ultimate question is, what does the U.S. hope to achieve?
The United States has announced a snapback of sanctions on Iran that were lifted following the 2015 nuclear deal between Tehran and the P5+1 group. The embargoes come 3 months after President Donald Trump's withdrawal from the historic accord. The first round of sanctions took effect on Tuesday.
The purchase or acquisition of U.S. banknotes by Iran's government, Iran's trade in gold and other precious metals, transactions related to the Iranian currency, Iran's automotive sector.
A second phase is planned to come into effect on November the 5th, which will have implications for Iran's energy and shipping sectors, petroleum trading, and transactions between foreign financial institutions and the Central Bank of Iran. On Monday, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani rebuked Trump's decision to reinstate sanctions, saying the U.S. government has turned its back on diplomacy with the latest move.
Trump and his government are the ones who have rejected negotiations and have turned their back on diplomacy. What Trump is doing is against the Iranian nation and against the national interests of Iran.
Rouhani said the U.S. did not want its anti-Iran sanctions to be unilateral. He said Washington, in fact, wanted the entire world to follow suit by imposing sanctions on Tehran, but it failed to achieve that goal. Washington's unilateral withdrawal comes despite the fact that other parties to the agreement have voiced their full support for the deal. European Union Foreign Policy Chief Federica Mogherini says the EU is encouraging investors to maintain business with Iran.
We are encouraging small and medium enterprises in particular to increase business with and in Iran. We are working within the European Union and with other partners in the world, among them New Zealand, but also Asian partners, to protect investments.
The EU has enabled the so-called blocking statute, a 1996 law that shields European companies from U.S. sanctions. Analysts believe the 28-nation bloc, as well as China and Russia, will not bow down to U.S. pressure.
EU and the countries that signed the JCPOA will stand behind it no matter what the United States tries to do to sabotage the whole thing. And that's very important. We have to go through a conflict with the United States on this one. And if you bow down submissively to this, it's the end of the European Union. If they cannot do this, they cannot do anything.
China and India, two of the biggest buyers of Iran's oil, have also announced that they will not stop the imports of oil from the Islamic Republic after the November sanctions. The sanctions which Donald Trump is imposing on Iran are those first introduced during the presidency of his predecessor, Barack Obama. But this time, Washington is more isolated than ever regarding the anti-Iran sanctions, even among its allies.
Our guest joining us for this edition of The Debate, head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masoud Shajar, joins us here in the studios. And from Foreign Policy and Focus, Ian Williams joins us from New York. Gentlemen, welcome. Masoud Shajar, let me first start with you. You're looking at a list of sanctions from the U.S. This one focused on dollars, metals trading, coal, industrial software, and auto sector, which also, in addition, came with a warning. And it's pretty firm that doing business with Tehran would be barred from the United States and could face sanctions themselves, countries that would do business with Iran. What do you think the U.S. hopes to achieve with these sanctions?
Well, it's very clear, and unfortunately these sanctions are in reality illegal because it's not covered by the international law and international community or the UN. But it is a bullying tactics to sort of, in reality, is a sort of collective punishment of the ordinary people in Iran. And it's been designed as such to sort of put pressure on the people, ordinary innocent people in Iran, when there is no justification for it. The international community is not going along with it. And indeed, the UN is not going along with it. So it really is a bullying tactic to sort of use sanctions for the political means. And in reality, it really is a declaration of war against Iran. It's an economical war. And the U.S. is not even embarrassed to say that it's been implemented as a means of regime change or the government change in Iran.
Ian Williams, do you think what Master Shajar there said is indeed true, that the U.S. is after regime change? I mean, you have the current U.S. Secretary of State to have said that, but then they have backtracked on it. Of course, Trump is hard to predict. He has backtracked on so many things. But do you think the ultimate goal is what our guest Masoud Shajar has said, regime change, even though as recent as just a day ago, Donald Trump has said that he's not after that?
Well, you know, Twitter by Twitter, it's very difficult to see what an ultimate goal is for Trump's foreign policy, like many others. It often seems to be made up on the spot, but in particular, this was conceived by Netanyahu and the Israeli government that wants the U.S. to fight a proxy war on their behalf against Iran and remove the regime. That's been quite clear from the beginning. And somehow Trump has been persuaded that this shows that he has a hairy chest. He's the big gorilla in the room if he goes through with it. As you can see, no one else in the rest of the world thinks that there's any legal or ethical justification for the sanctions. And I think it's going to be counterproductive for U.S. policy. We're already seeing signs, for example, the Chinese renminbi is now on the verge of becoming convertible currency, specifically to deal with Iranian oil. And that's going to pose a big threat to the dollar down the line. The reason that Trump can bluster about these sanctions is because, I think rather amazingly after all these years, the U.S. currency is still the main sort of reserve currency of the world. But there are others very eager and willing to move into the gap, and especially with the temptations of the large oil trade from Iran. The Russians will be happy to use rubles to settle their any oil accounts. The Indians have already shown that they're going to defy it. The Chinese have not said they're going to increase take-up, but they're not going to reduce it. And in the meantime, the U.S. economy and the world economy is being affected because, of course, this type of saber rattling and the rest of the instability means that the spot prices of oil are going up across the world. And that has repercussions on planning, on economic decisions. It's going to increase inflation in the U.S., which means the Federal Reserve has to think about checking the economy from their way of looking at it. That they will start to increase interest rates, and the same for other countries around the world, because the Trump decision is building in inflation. And in the meantime, lots of people will happily cooperate in breaking the sanctions. And it does seem, just think of the European Union. Trump has declared economic war on them. He's declared economic war on Russia. Why should these people show any solidarity with a decision that they fundamentally disagree with, because they all think the joint the JCP is perfectly legitimate and was achieving its function? So the US is isolating itself. It's still a pretty big isolation because it is the big gorilla in the room still, but it's a gorilla who's shrinking and whose fur is getting increasingly gray as the years go by. So he's building up big trouble for the future.
Well, the statement there, Master Shajar, that Ian Williams made is somewhat reflective of what Iran's foreign minister just said, that the United States, Israel, and Saudi Arabia are actually isolating themselves when it comes to their approach on Iran. But, Master Shajar, maybe Donald Trump has to do a history check when it comes to Iran and sanctions. I mean, Iran has endured sanctions. Iran has an economy that's called the resistance economy that is, for the most part, if not for the majority of that, composed to deal with sanctions, of which Iran, even though it's going to hurt, many say, as you said, ordinary Iranians, that they're going to weather this out. Has the U.S. thought this fully through in order to achieve whatever it is that they want, and in what you said, they want regime change?
Well, I think, you know, the question is, has Trump ever thought through anything whatsoever beyond few seconds? And, you know, it's the way he actually changed his mind, the way he moves forward. But I think really the reality is, as you said very clearly, Iran has been sort of under sanctions of one sort or another from the time of the revolution, and actually, if anything, has served it well. It served it in such a way that, you know, it developed its armed forces internally, it developed its economy internally, it actually gave it confidence. And we see the countries who actually end up relying on themselves, they actually become more successful. But I think we need to go and look at sanctions as a whole. Has sanctions ever in the history have actually achieved anything? Look at what happened in Iraq. You know, it was one of the worst sanctions in the world. And as you know, famously, when Madeleine Albright was asked that 500,000 ordinary innocent children in Iraq are dying as a result of sanctions, and is that justifiable? She said yes. I mean, this is war crime. But even that war crime, even the fact that the sanctions against Iraq was supported internationally by almost everyone, it still did not achieve anything. Sanctions don't achieve anything. Sanctions, I believe, are immoral. It actually affects the most innocent people and the poorest and the most vulnerable people in any society, if it's effective. And here, we are very clearly seeing that it's not going to be effective. It's going to be just the United States bullying and shouting. And, you know, and I think, you know, the reality is that this is not going to get anywhere, except it's going to have a devastating effect for international community, and indeed is going to further the situation of economy, not just in Iran, but affected in Europe and elsewhere. And it really is a non-starter. But I want to emphasize, I actually believe sanctions are immoral. Right now, we've got sanctions against 20 countries around the world, and you know, most of them is led by United States, and the devastation, be it in Yemen or be it anywhere else, it really is totally unacceptable. It's immoral, and I would say in some cases very clearly it's war crime.
Well, one person who doesn't think that is John Bolton. I wonder what you think of John Bolton, Ian Williams. Let's see, he says Iran's only chance of escaping sanctions, take up the offer to negotiate with Trump for a tougher deal. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you have to remember that when sanctions were invented by the old League of Nations, it was as an alternative to war. And, you know, part of these sanctions are intended to precipitate a war. You know, sanctions are not necessarily all bad. I mean, I was happily calling for sanctions on South Africa. And along with a diplomatic unrest and domestic unrest, they did actually topple the South African regime eventually. The call for sanctions against Israel and Israeli settlements certainly upsets the Israeli government. But in this particular case, it's quite clear that the sanctions don't have a predetermined end. They're not going to alter Tehran's insistence that the legitimate legal instrument that it signed should still stand. So it's really difficult to see what the end game is, unless, and John Bolton is one of the hawks and always has been one of the hawks, unless it's intended to precipitate military action of some kind. And, you know, I think that's unfathomable because, of course, the U.S. is, there's no mood in the U.S. for yet another front in the Middle East. Most people are trying to get out of the ones that they're already involved in. But you think of the differences. Scenarios, you think of how they started the Vietnam War with the Gulf of Tonkin, and you know, I think I just worry about the runaway repercussions. You know, for example, if this is an attempt to stage an incident in the Gulf with an attack on a Saudi ship or whatever, you know, or a European tanker sailing from Saudi Arabia, or even if they're going to do it the other way around, you know, if the Saudis and the others were going to try and pick off Iranian tankers and invite retaliation from the Revolutionary Guard there, for example. All of these have ways of heterodyning out of control completely. Mm-hmm. And that, once again, as we all agree, that Trump does not think long term. He thinks one tweet ahead. And These things have profound long-term implications. The worst thing for the international system is instability in this way, that mm-hmm. nobody's quite sure what the state of the economy is going to be, nobody's quite sure what the state of relations are. You have the Saudis and some of the Gulf states, along with Israel, jumping up and down, hoping that Tehran will be taken out. And there'll be intense preparations to get the US on side for this. Lots of maneuvers, right. Lots of skullduggery, but it's just so disturbing that there's no rational thought behind all of this. You know, Trump, they pick out their enemies, and then they invent justifications for the the enmity. They've never really expounded what it is they have, especially against Tehran. They talk about human rights, but it's very difficult to talk about human rights when you're counterposing Iran to Saudi Arabia or Israel in terms of making this a justifiable motion for a crusade. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to talk about economic reasons. You know, Iran has been delivering the oil. It's a big market. There's lots of American and European companies would like to sell to Iran. This is a contrived crisis. And if somebody's contriving a crisis, you have to assume that the worst, that they will carry on contriving to make the crisis precipitate itself properly.
Well, let's expand a little bit more there, Master Shajara, what Ian Williams said. I mean, there is a camp, Master Shajara. We could sit here and bash the U.S. for another 6 minutes of the program. But let's look at what happened recently, and I'll get to my question. You have Anwar Gargash, who is the UAE, he's got two positions, but a prominent one, Minister of State for Foreign Affairs. Recently, when he was in London, he said that, we are not on the same page with the U.S. and the U.K. when it comes to certain regional issues, Iran being one of them. And it was interesting when he said that the U.S. is actually going after a path that the EU is when it comes to Iran. Do you think that even if there is a side or a camp that says Trump is not after the confrontational approach but wants to sit down and talk with Iran, it's the allies or the countries that he backs, such as Saudi Arabia and the UAE, and of course you can talk about the entity Israel, that they don't want the U.S. to get into any type of dialogue with Iran. Do you think that's a possibility?
Well, that is actually very clear. I mean, it's very clear that Israel, now joined by Saudi Arabia and UAE, is an unholy marriage which has only bound them together in their commitment to actually start some sort of war with Iran. And if United States indeed have no stomach for another war in the region, and I believe that the U.S. armed forces realize and recognize that there is really no value, and it's a non-starter to start the war with Iran. I mean, we saw what happened in Afghanistan when they started the war with Taliban. I mean, now, after all these years, after all these expenses, after all these sort of death and destruction, so they're begging the Taliban to do some sort of deal. And Iran is not Taliban. Iran is not Afghanistan. Iran has got its own sort of armed forces. It really is a regional power, and it's got a huge support internally and externally. So, what I'm worried, the other contributor, is that Israel, Saudis, and others who are really looking for war will create an environment when that actually happens. And unfortunately, if that happens, it will be really a catastrophe for the whole region. And indeed, I think we are going to see a huge changes after that. And I really don't think no one whatsoever are going to be winners out of that. And definitely, Iran cannot be defeated militarily or indeed by these sanctions. So really, I'm actually quite worried that this will be a catalyst for some sort of mistakes or design to actually create and fuel a war.
Well, Ian Williams, the path to war is something that Trump even though, again, it's very, he's been very inconsistent in terms of his idea of war, when he says he doesn't want the U.S. wars to continue. During his campaign trail, he talked about that. But then we see him contributing more troops and continuing the Afghan war. But I got a few minutes here, so let me ask you this. One of the quotes Trump said recently, the Iranian, as he calls regime, faces a choice, either change its threatening, destabilizing behavior, or for it to continue down a path of economic isolation, but that he is open to reaching a more comprehensive deal with Iran. Of course, then he says to deal with malign activities of Iran. Is Trump sincere when he makes these statements, or he knows that Iran is not going to compromise on some core issues and that he makes statements like this?
Well, Iran was in dialogue with the Europeans and the others. The Europeans were quite happy to act as interlocutors and to make reasonable points. Iran, at no point, has been unreasonable about this. And whatever you might think about the government in Tehran, in terms of international law, ethics, step by step, they've been on the side of the angels throughout this. And the other idea that they have, that somehow sanctions will destabilize the country and people will bring the regime down, all the signs are that ordinary Iranians blame Trump for the sanctions. They're not blaming their own government, because after all, it's Trump that introduced the sanctions. And also, even on the very issue, even Iranian opposition abroad actually supports Iran's right for nuclear weapons, for a nuclear program. They supported that fairly consistently in the external press that I saw. So this is no way to put it. This is not a wedge issue between the government in Tehran and the people there. There might well be issues coming down the line, for as we've seen, but it's not going to be precipitated by Trump sanctions. And we just have to think of Cuba. I've actually been to Cuba, and the economic regime there was disastrous for many years, and many of the failings were down to the government's mismanagement of the economy. But all Fidel Castro and his brothers had to do was to say, oh, look, it's the American embargo causes it all. So when people couldn't get a piece of bread in the morning, they didn't blame Castro, they blamed the US sanctions, even if it had nothing to do with it. And that's precisely what's going to happen here, that the aggressive, unjustified sanctions by the US against the government in Tehran are more likely to rally solidarity than to provoke dissent, I suspect. Of course, I'm speaking as an outsider.
Well, a last question is going to go to you, Masoud Shajari, and I hate to put you in the hot seat, but I'm going to ask you this question. Should Iran talk to the U.S., and under what conditions, if so?
Well, really, I think talking to U.S. while Trump is in power is a sort of a madness. I mean, the reality is that no one could make any sense whatsoever discussing anything with Trump. I mean, the reality is that the whole of the international community has accepted that Iran is not involved in any development of nuclear weapon, and indeed guaranteed that that is the case. But Trump has sort of been extremely unpredictable and unrealistic, and goes against all the evidence. So really, speaking to a buffoon like Trump and having a discussion when he behaves the way he has behaved is a madness, and I don't think Iranian establishment, indeed Iranian government, has sort of overnight become that sort of inclined.
Thank you. We're going to leave it there. That's head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masoud Shajari. Thank you for your comments. And from Foreign Policy and Focus, Ian Williams, thank you, who spoke to us from New York. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitali, the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.